The Hebrew Order of David is one of our community's oldest and most established global outreach organizations. Join Stan Claff for the next hour as he explores the issues facing the men in the community. The HOD Hour is a fundraising initiative for the HOD. Welcome to the HOD Hour with Stan Claff. This is the HOD Hour with Stan Claff.
In 1904, following the Boer War, there was a mass immigration from Europe of Jews to South Africa, and the Hebrew Order of David was formed in that year. In the 1990s and late 1980s, there was emigration from South Africa to places around the world, Australia, United Kingdom, Canada, Israel, etc. And one of our finest immigrants was Cyril Brodie, who emigrated to Canada and was instrumental in forming the first Hebrew Order of David Lodge in Canada, and hopefully the one of many. And tonight we're going to discuss with him the formation of the lodge, his early days in South Africa as a Cape Townian, and where the Hebrew Order of David is going. Hello, Cyril.
Hello, Stan.
Was that a fair introduction?
It is a very pleasant introduction. I wouldn't say one of the finest, but anyway.
Well,
thank you for the compliments.
Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. What can I say?
Thank you.
Hebrew Order of David formed a lodge, Lodge Ilan Ramon.
Lodge Ilan Ramon started in 2011. It was our fourth attempt to get it started. Based mainly, well, the challenges really were that we had to start off, as most people know, in a new country, you want to start off with some people who know what it's about. And
sure.
That was our biggest challenge, was getting commitment from ex-members from South Africa who had moved, who were still trying to find their feet in Toronto, Canada as well. But on the fourth attempt, we were very successful, and we've maintained a membership of about 50 members. We've lost some, won some, but we've stuck basically at the 50, all the way through. And we're trying to reach out more to the younger Canadians, and in particular more Canadians, so that we can ensure the growth and continuation of the principles on which the order is founded. So that's where we're at the moment.
So in the meeting that decided, that was at the fourth attempt, the meeting that was decided in Max Skewy's basement in Toronto, you changed the mood of the meeting by saying all things are possible and we should go ahead. And quickly the people in the meeting who were a little bit ambivalent at the time seemed to come forward, and from there was no stopping you. And lo and behold, in 2011, we formed the lodge, and you were the consecration president. And
yeah.
I was at that ceremony, and it was well attended and an exciting day for the order, and an exciting day for you. And it was my pleasure to install you as the consecration president, and it's a day I won't forget.
Thank you. I won't forget it either. it was a great day. It was a momentous day. I remember that meeting in the late squeeze off room, and yeah, the mood was ambivalent. And I think at that stage we had a commitment from about six people, in Toronto to help us form the lodge. And we had a session, I think it was in December of that same year. So it's 2010. That basically I said, look, if we don't get the 40 or 50 members, we're not going to go ahead with it. And we had a session in January of that year, and we went from the six to, I think it was nearly 44 who signed up on the day, in a mass meeting. And that really was how the lodge got started in Toronto.
The mood had changed. Yes, absolutely. And the lodge is in Thornhill, which is translated as Doornkop.
Yeah. It's kind of in the north part of the city. At the moment, we're looking to try and expand south, but what we've done is we have a couple of younger members who've become very active over the last 2-3 years, who want to expand the lodge, obviously in membership, and a number of them live south of where we are. Toronto is actually quite a big area. So what we're doing is we're trying to reach out through them to members of their congregation. So we'll actually have meetings at different synagogues, to try and convince people to join. And once we have sufficient numbers, we'll create something down in the southern area, and then maintain two lodges. It's a slow expansion. For some reason, a lot of Canadians just don't recognize us yet, even though we've been active for the last 8 years, but we are getting some traction. So things are looking positive.
So the lodge it falls under the umbrella of the North American Governing Lodge, where there's been also a fair amount of expansion, and things are looking promising. It's interesting to note that amongst the members, the brethren who form part of your lodge who are immigrants who came from Cape Town. I'm talking about Ronald Lindsay, Joe Varkel, yourself.
Yeah.
And, I mean, at the time when you left lodges which were strong in Cape Town and vibrant, and you've taken that philosophy and that feeling with you. And I think that there is that feeling when you go there that you know, you have the connection to Cape Town. And I must say it's powerful and it's palpable in that lodge. So yes, it is a lodge that I think shows great signs of expansion, and you certainly have the members of the lodge who are gung-ho.
We have some very, very, as you put it, gung-ho members. We've had one brother who joined here, wasn't a member in South Africa, Brother Leonard Lazer, who's our current IPP, after doing a second stint as the vice president and president in the short time that we've been going. He's also our current scribe and churning out great newsletters.
Yes.
And he's very, very positive about it. And I think the people who are currently involved are all brethren who consider the HOD, the principles and the aims and objectives to be very much more important. It's the greater good is for HOD, not for personal gain. And that's really my philosophy. I've never really looked and said, well, you know, I want to get a little bit of praise and yichas for doing this. That's not what I want. I want HOD, and in particular my new mother lodge, if you like, Lodge Ilan Ramon, to be seen as a dynamic force in the Jewish community in Toronto.
So who are you've just installed a new slate of officers, and who's the new president?
The new president is a guy called Brian Simon, who was never a member in South Africa. He joined here. He's got involved from the early stage. I think he's been a member for about 4 years now. And he is very, very keen to see the lodge grow as well. Our youngest vice president is, just been installed, is Akiva Sandler, ex-South Africa, ex-Israel, now in Toronto. We're hoping that, and he's actually very dynamic and wants to bring in more and more of the younger people, which is great. And that's the attraction. For want of nobody else, they've elected me as the secretary, but so we won't talk about that. We have
better.
A treasurer in Brian Berman, who is also, a fairly new member in Toronto, and has been very, very active and very, very instrumental in running or assisting with the very successful golf day that we've had to raise funds for various charities. A scribe I've mentioned. What other positions do you want? The IMC is a very young guy who's trying to aspire to be perhaps more what his father is or was. I don't know. That's my son, Gary.
Fine footsteps to follow in.
Pardon?
good footsteps to follow in.
Yeah, but you know, I've had to unfortunately temper him on a couple of decisions that he wants. But you know what? I'm actually stepping back. I would like to step back and watch the others do it. But as one of the younger members of the lodge turned to me about a month ago and said, "Well, you are the elder statesman, and we really respect you." I don't know why, but they do. So I want to make sure that this succeeds. So we have the MC, we have a registrar, Abramson, I've forgotten his name, Mark Abramson, who's been very active as well in the lodge, basically I think he joined in the second year we were going. We've tried to convince him to be the vice president and obviously the president, but he's still reluctant, and we'll get him there one day. So it's a complete nucleus, a new nucleus of brethren who've stepped up to the plate for the current slate of officers, excluding myself. The executive is very different, and we're there to help the brethren as they're growing into their positions, and that's what we've done. Especially for the VP who's basically said, I need to know how to run the organization from a VP perspective, and all the past presidents have committed to providing any feedback, any assistance, any logistic help, any suggestions, etc. as we're going along, and so far it's working very well.
So give us a sense of the give us a sense of the kind of projects that you're doing, what kind of fundraising, your Chavashaft activities. People like to know, you know, what's been done, not only on the fundraising part, they want to know if you can have some fun with it.
Yeah. So, you know, from a social perspective, which is looking internally at the lodge and Chavashaft side of it itself, we've had very successful trivia evenings with, and provided soup and bagel, to the people. The trivia has stretched to, photos of past of members in their misspent youth, i.e. babies, and we've had to guess, and it's been really fun evenings. We've had Hanukkah parties for the entire family, provided sufganiyot and all that stuff for them. We've had our annual picnic, which we've opened up over the last few years to prospective members and their families as well, to try and get them to meet, and we've actually been successful in getting one or two of them to join. For the brethren themselves, we've had a sukkah dinner, during the sukkah ceremony holiday last year. Served some hot chili and, hot buns and stuff like that. And it was not obviously Pesedika stuff. Not Pesedika stuff, but sukkah, you know, sure. And it was very, very well attended. Every time you provide food, we find that we get almost all the brethren coming out, so it's great. We have an annual barbecue, so our June meeting is usually followed by a fish barbecue, and again, very, very well attended June meetings. We also, for the last 2 years or 2 years, we did run a Chavashaft 9-hole. Golf day, if you like. Brethren just came out, whether you could hack the ball or you could actually hit the ball or whatever. It's just to come and have some fun with the guys. We've gone to the aquarium down in the city center. We actually managed to get a whole group to go to see, I think it was the Globetrotters, Harlem Globetrotters is the basketball evening.
Right.
Our outreach to the community has involved, supporting UJ Walk for Israel. The first few years we actually ran a table. We then also ran a water station for them. But then we've noticed that they really didn't need us. So we just didn't do it again. We've reached out to the firefighters in the Vaughan area. So we get the women and or men and or brethren, to do some baking or whatever it is. And then we take cakes and cookies and whatever to the various, fire stations in Vaughan area. I think last year we delivered to about 9 or 10. And this is a fun day also for the families, and where you can bring your grandchildren and your children, because the firemen are quite happy to show you around a fire hall and let you climb over the various fire engines and stuff like that. It's great fun. We've provided manpower to deliver Passover food hampers. We've also provided manpower to help pack those food hampers for Passover. We do an annual clothing drive to support Jewish family and child services. That's usually done just before Rosh Hashanah. So I think this year we're looking at early September. We've also managed to acquire from a third party a donation of clothing almost on a continuous basis right now. And a lot of that is going to an organization called Vahafta, which is an outreach program to people on the street, living on the street. Also donated clothing and essentials to Blue Door Shelter. And we have also just run during the winter months, we did a pack, what was called a backpack for brothers, which was we filled backpacks with some winter essentials for the homeless, and we actually drove around the city. We didn't. We donated it to a place. I think it was the Blue Door Shelter. And they handed them out for us to the various people. Wonderful. And we've also reached out to an organization now called Danny, which looks after physically and mentally challenged youth. We've taken them bowling. We've provided them with pizzas and stuff like that. And we've also reached out to an organization called the Rena Foundation, which is more for is a similar organization to Danny, except that it covers the broader spectrum of the community. It's not just a Jewish organization where Danny is just Jewish.
Right.
On the fundraising side, we've been pretty active in donating funds to the Hospital for Children, which is an enormous organization downtown. We've also donated to Danny organization. We've also donated to other Jewish organizations. And we were successful last year in making a donation to an organization in Israel called the Soldiers Welfare Fund. This is a kibbutz near the Gaza area that provide sandwiches to boys coming off duty and going home. And they provide tea and coffee and sandwiches for them while they're waiting for their buses. So we made a donation so that they could continue doing that. And we might or might not repeat that. We don't know yet.
So early days of the order in Israel, the lodges in Israel used to do that on a regular basis. Of course, the situation was much more volatile. And so those sandwiches were at a lot of stations throughout the country. The order was very active in that initiative.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Yeah. This came about because one of our members, Les Prosser, used to live on a kibbutz in that area, and they reached out to him. So it's kind of a circle closing. And I think most of us feel very, very proud and very glad to have done that.
Yes.
And moving forward, possibly do it again.
So,
what else would you like me to tell you?
No, I want to take you back now to your days in Cape Town. You were very active in the lodge in Cape Town. I think you were even the president at a stage. So give us an idea of the difference between when you were here. I mean, obviously we try to keep the lodge's activities on a similar basis and the operations. So that if you walked into a lodge in Toronto, you walked into a lodge in Johannesburg, you would feel at home. So just give us an idea of what you left behind. Do you miss it?
I do very much, less now that we have a lodge in Toronto, and very much more when we first came here. It would have been great to have a lodge existing here when we first arrived to help us, let's call it assimilate, into the greater population. I don't remember the exact date I joined, but I can tell you that, our newly worthy brother, Joe Varkel, was my president, my very first president. He did my initiation ceremony. And fairly active from the beginning in the lodge in South Africa. I had two young children, so that tempered some of the activities that one could go to and how often you could be involved and stuff like that. But I soon rose to the position of I was secretary, I think, at one stage, and then vice president, and then president, and obviously
talking about Lodge Golan here.
Pardon?
We're talking about Lodge Golan in Cape Town.
Yeah, we're talking about Lodge Golan. That's my lodge. My first term as the VP, we brought into play the very successful Bay City Cycle Tour.
Right.
Which raised about $15,000 for National Cancer, I think it was. Unbelievable event when you consider that we basically had to man a lot of stops, make sure that the riders were very safe. It was a great, great event. And I think it continued for a number of years, even after I left, which is also good.
They've had difficulties with the Cycling Association and some of the funding for that project. So, till the last year or two, they were running it successfully, but unfortunately they've had to can it because of, there were certain stumbling blocks in the way.
Okay. It was when I was there, it was done, under the auspices of the Western Province Cycling Union or something or whatever.
Yes.
And they had strict rules. In fact, when we came here and we watched some people doing cycling over here, we were quite surprised that at the age of 14 or 15, you could actually say, I don't need to wear a helmet anymore. And yet in South Africa, everybody had to wear helmets when you were on a bicycle. You know, your head doesn't get stronger. Your head stays the same. You know, fall, that's what's going to get hurt. So it was fun. It's something I don't, you know, I looked at doing here once. But it's more complex here. There are a lot of organizations that are doing various walks and various rides and stuff like that. There's a very, very big one here, which is involved with cancer research, which is over a 2 or 3 day period. In fact, one of our brethren, is about to ride for the 6th year, and he's raising funds for cancer research.
Wonderful.
So, and he himself is going through cancer treatment. So it's amazing that he's actually going into his 6th year that he's doing this.
We're going to take a break for a minute or two. We just we have to pay the rent. We'll be back. Stay on the line.
This is the HOD Hour with Stan Claff.
And I'm Stan Claff, and I have on the studio Cyril Brody from Toronto in Canada. He's the past president, the founding president of the Lodge Ilan Ramon in Toronto, and we're discussing his early days in Cape Town and his roots with the Hebrew Order of David here, and then of course his efforts in putting together and founding the lodge in Toronto in Canada. Cyril, give us as I was saying earlier, the lodge is part of a larger entity called the Governing Lodge of North America. And you play a quite a pivotal role in that organization, and rightly so.
The last time I checked, I think I'm the national governing secretary. There was a meeting last night. Unfortunately, I could not attend. I had a prior commitment. So the governing lodge is actually very active. It's more active in the States itself, and I understand why. That's where most of the brethren are. In fact, on some occasions, we've, not only me, but some of us have felt like we kind of the orphans of the crowd. But we work very well with them, and they assist us when necessary, and we obviously assist them when necessary. And it's a good working relationship. I think it's, being on the governing lodge is nice because you can see what other lodges are doing besides through the means of their newsletters. Because you're meeting with presidents and in some cases VPs, and you can see where they're growing and how they want to grow and how they want to develop. And we share ideas a lot better that way than through the newsletters. I think in North America, it is very strong, particularly strong in Atlanta. I think Atlanta today has four lodges. Very strong in Houston. They just keep growing, bigger and bigger, which is great. And Dallas is also very strong. Boca is has been a challenge, but I think it's now stabilized, and they tend to get a lot of, I know some of our members down who live in Toronto will actually attend some lodge meetings during the winter months when they're down in Florida.
Run away
because
from the cold.
It's pretty cold up here. Pardon?
I said they run away from the cold.
Yeah, they do. They do. I don't blame them. It's not so
sure
much
not.
The cold. It's the snow and it's the ice and it's the slushy weather and the slushy driving and stuff like that.
Look, if you can do that, then why not?
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you can, you can. And then I don't know. I do know that there's a lodge also in San Diego.
Yes.
I just don't know how well that's doing.
So they've had a change of officers and they're starting to come up. I've had a few of the issues, but of course it's early days. I've only been going for a year or so. And, you know, it takes time to bed yourself down and get involved in the community. Last week we interviewed Boris Grimont from Dallas. He's also, he was the founding, vice president, the start of that lodge in Dallas.
Yeah.
And, very active still today in the lodge.
Yes.
So in forming the lodge in Canada, I mean, you talk of yourselves as the orphans, but in actual fact, you play quite a role because, Canada has a huge Jewish population. There's no reason why there can't be expansion. And we need the flag to fly in those other territories, especially where there's, you know, it's English speaking and it makes it easy to open lodges.
Absolutely.
And you, of course, you always know that you have the backing of the order to do that.
Yes.
You have the manpower. I mean, what I've seen in there in the personnel that are in the lodge, it's a strong, you have strong personalities and people who are very most capable of taking the lodge further. And, you know, I think that there's a formula within the Hebrew Order of David, which gels to a greater extent in North America than it does elsewhere because you have the college system. You have fraternities, you well understand the process, and that, I mean, that's important.
Yes. Yeah. So that's what we're trying to do. And I think with a younger group that we've elected in, especially in our vice president, there's also a push to get more of the youngsters involved. So we, in the early days, it was a case of, it's just a bunch of old South Africans getting together and having a meeting, but we've reached the stage now where we have, somewhere about, I think they're about 15 or 20 in brethren in the age group 25 to let's say 40. So I would put them as the youngsters. Young guys who married, young guys with one or two children, maybe even three children and trying to find traction that way. We're also reaching out, through our MC to, AEPI, which is a Jewish fraternity at the various universities, in Canada. And the idea is to try and do one or two projects with them and hopefully, show them a path that when they leave university, hang on a second, there's another fraternity that they can move into called the HOD, and help us grow that way as well, and get some of the youngsters involved. We're also hoping that some of them will bring their fathers to the social gatherings that we're doing or the whatever meetings we're trying to arrange for them, because that way we can get the fathers involved too, and expand our outreach that way. So we're doing it through many channels to try and reach out, trying to break free of the stereotype of being a South African organization. To be more of a Jewish men's club, a fraternity, looking after themselves and the greater community as a whole.
So just to enlighten listeners on the structure of the Hebrew Order of David. So originally the structure was purely South African, the grand executive,
yes.
The whole structure was South Africa. All lodges fell under the umbrella of the mother organization, so to speak. But as time went on, we started to realize that there was a need to separate the different countries. And so we took away the governor, the grand executive from South Africa and formed that as the overarching body. Now there's a governing lodge in South Africa, a governing lodge in North America, a governing lodge in the United UK. Kingdom. And then, of course, Israel falls with, you know, under the umbrella of the Grand Executive. And so our two lodges there carry on working with the cooperation of the Grand Executive. But the structure is now that the lodges in those regions report, and it's a much more efficient way of doing things. They report directly to the governing lodge. And I want to emphasize the point that as a international organization, I think we structured it correctly. I think there's an opportunity and there's certainly the resources and the ability to be able to expand and do projects. And the Hebrew Order of David is in a unique situation in that we don't have to abide by all the rules of normal fundraising. The sky's the limit. You can do what you want, where you want it, provided it makes sense and it's good for the organization. You'll get the full backing, and it can come at lodge level. Yep. It can come at regional level. It can come at the international level, where we have a full structure in place with the able-bodied people running it and overseeing it, and opportunities for youngsters to come in and be part of this, ready-made without having to start from, you know, ground zero.
Absolutely. I think one of the cleverest things was to have it, having a governing lodge in each area, in each, let's call it environment, because the environments are different. The North American culture is different to the South African culture, it's different to the UK culture. And, having the governing lodge in North America, we can work, as a unit to expand in North America. Canada is different to America itself. And we do things a little bit differently up here, but generally we follow the same guidelines and the same emphasis to try and grow as an organization. You spoke about doing international projects. Well, we've got fairly involved in a UK project, which is a pet project of the UK lodges called Zichron Menachem.
Correct.
Which is the hospital that treats young cancer patients. We've given some cash contributions, but we've also become very involved in getting hair and getting donations for making wigs. So we've just run a very successful one at one of the Jewish day schools where they had 19 girls and one a teacher and a mother who came and cut their long locks off, and we donated that, and that hair's gone off to them. Yes, and we have another one coming up. I think it's in June, July. We have another cut coming up, and then we're getting very good traction in doing that. And that's an international project,
which
cuts across borders.
That project in Zichron Menachem in Jerusalem, at their center, is where the Hebrew Order of David funded a beauty salon, and that's where these shaitels are fitted and given to these pretty young girls who suffer from cancer, have lost their hair, and it's apparently an essential part of getting people to have a better look at themselves,
feel good.
They
feel good about themselves, and that helps with them with the treatment.
Yes, so we're very proud of that, and there are opportunities, and we will be interviewing the representatives from Zichron Menachem in the weeks to come. But let me just make a point of the Zichron Menachem. It is a unique organization in that it takes the care of these children from very young age up until they're able to look after themselves, sort of, you know, in their 20s. It looks after them. It takes the some of the tension and some of the stress off the parents, because kids are there all day. They get washed, bathed, and fed, and before they go home, so the parent doesn't have to have that kind of a problem. And in addition, they have a set of rooms attached where parents of these ill children can come and be able to visit them over a weekend and stay in the facility there, right on the premises. And that is an amazing thing for kids to be able to, and parents to be able to visit on that basis, because a lot of these people don't have the wherewithal to be able to do that. And I've been privileged to be able, they invited me to spend a couple of nights there. I went with one of our brethren, and unfortunately he passed away. The two of us stayed there for a couple of nights. We were treated royally. And I was amazed at what kind of work this organization does. And added to that, the Zichra Menachem sends all their children, plus helpers, plus doctors, plus everybody involved, a total of about 300 to 350 people, in a plane load to England, and they spend a week there, and the order looks after them for a day, treats them to a day out, feeds them, looks after them, gives them gifts, and really makes them feel at home, a part of the community. It's a big project there.
It really is. So my wife B and I are going to be in Israel for the 19th of July and stuff. So we've already been asked by Eddie Schneider over here to be in contact with them and actually go and visit Zichron Menachem, just so have a personal view and look through, walk through the place, which I think will be an eye opener, and it'll be a good thing to do.
When you go there, you feel as if you are the most important person in the world, and it's actually a little heartbreaking in a sense.
Yeah, I've heard that's how they treat the children. You know, that you're the patient, you are the most important person, and it's great.
Now, when you do go there,
we have organizations that are doing similar work, but not quite the same. So we do have the Ronald McDonald Homes, which come out of McDonald's. As you well know, we also have High Lifeline here, which does a very similar thing, but not to the same extent as Zichron Menachem is doing in Israel. I just think, you know, going back in time and looking at everything that I've done in Lodge, to me, it's the best benefit has always been to see how your kids grow, how your kids develop a passion for doing outreach to other communities, other people less fortunate than themselves. And I think through Lodge, we've given them that ability. Less so, yeah, I don't know. We just don't seem to get as many people doing that in Toronto yet. But I think once you do that, you will have the family members wanting to join. We're not the only family. There's another family, the Weiss family. Father and son are members. And it's great. It's great to see the Lodge going and the youngsters coming in through that and developing their feel for doing good. Just because they want to do good. And to me that's really what the Lodge means.
And so, let me just give you a little bit of background to some of the projects that we're doing here. We're doing a project which you might want to look at. We are preparing we have photographs which we have been receiving on a project called A Day in the Life of a Jew in South Africa. And we're going to put this into a coffee book at some point, or, you know, a coffee table book. And, there's 25,000 rand, not dollars, sorry, 25,000 rand worth of prize money up for grabs. We are looking at some sponsors. The project will be launched towards the end of June fully, but, today with technology, you can take your cell phone, you can take a photograph as good as any photographer and of any kind of activity that might be Jewish related in any which way, send it to our organization, and the email address is admin@hrdavid.org, and it's open to the public of any age. And, I can really see this being something which people in South Africa could treasure as a keepsake once we've put it all together. Hopefully we'll be publishing the photographs on our Facebook page and on our website, which is going to be launched towards the end of the month. And, that should bring about some publicity for the organization. We've started now, you were talking about packing parcels. So we have a Bringing Yont of Joy project, which we distribute parcels, food parcels here and in the Eastern Cape, around about Yontif, just in time for Rosh Hashanah. And, we go to the public, and I have to tell you that the public in South Africa, I'm sure you'll remember, is exceedingly generous, and they help us in a very big way. And we're able to really make these parcels meaningful and deliver them to this. We work with an organization here called Kosher Mobile Meals, and they assist us with the delivery because they have the ability to do that. And they also help with the packing, but we do all the collection, the purchase of the product. And it's a project which has been going on for almost 40 years and increasing in size every year. So it's something.
That's great.
Give us a little bit of a sense of some of the projects that are in the offing that people could contribute to. And you can even give out addresses. This podcast will be sent around the world. People are already listening to it on audio throughout the world. And we know that we have a connection with Israel, definitely the United States. We get messages all day. And actually the outreach or the impact of this program has been quite phenomenal. We've had queries from people, Philadelphia. I've had even queries from somebody from Germany, France, one or two queries from Israel about people who were involved at some stage with the order. And in fact, we have a very extensive database of almost 20,000 names. And of the names in that database, if you had to look at the names, the surnames of everybody in that database, you'd probably find that 99% of families in South Africa are in that database. So there's uncles, fathers, brothers, cousins who were involved in the Hebrew Order of David, as you well know, over all the years. Now living, of course, Brody in Toronto, where your next dynasty is going to be.
It's very difficult to tell you what our current projects are because we had our installation a month and a half ago.
Right.
Of our new offices. We've gone to an 18 month term. We want to try it and see. I think a number of lodges in the States are now 2-year terms. But the brethren here, certainly the president and vice president, don't want to be involved for a 6-year term, from VP through to IPP. So, I do know that right now we're looking at some social events, which is our June meeting barbecue and then our annual picnic coming up. And then we're waiting to hear from our VP and president what long-term projects they want to run for the next year. I think that'll be coming out, it should be as part of the July management meeting, which is in about 2 weeks' time. Obviously, we do have our ongoing stuff, which is the clothing drive, which we're going to do in September. Our annual golf day, which we would like to make more successful, obviously, be more successful at doing it, get more people, more traction that way. And generally reach out to people who might have relatives, friends, and even enemies living in Toronto who might be interested in joining the lodge.
Ex-friends.
And sharing those names. Ex-friends, whatever you want to call them. We'll convert them into being friends and get them involved in the expansion of the Hebrew of David International here in Toronto and even further afield. I mean, I've spoken to a couple of people outside of Toronto as well, but unfortunately there's just not enough traction to even consider expanding into the other outlying cities yet.
But in time,
in time it will come. I think we expand in Toronto itself right now. A second lodge would be a great boon to us. And show Canada what we can do. Cause we have been in the Canadian Jewish news. We have been in other Jewish press in Canada. So we're slowly making traction or getting traction.
So I have to also say in my experience in having been to some of your installations and visited Canada over the last number of years that besides the fact that you're a fraternity and we're all part of this fraternity, the wives of the brethren are involved. They support you in all the activities and that is very encouraging because Jewish men seem to really depend on what their wives think, and if your wife is supportive, that says a lot for the organization. And I think, particularly in Canada, you feel it. It's something which is part of the makeup of the lodge. And it's led, by the way, by led, by the way, by your wife. Led, by the way, by your wife.
Yeah, she was very involved in the beginning. She was very involved in South Africa, unfortunately. Or she would say, not unfortunately, fortunately.
Not at all.
The involvement of the women in South Africa is different to the involvement here. Here the women are quite happy to stay at home and send their men out for a night so that they can have some peace and quiet, I think. I remember one of our early meetings before we even consecrated the lodge. We had a social evening, and it was there to just introduce the various people, husbands and wives, to prospective members. And somebody insisted that I give a spiel about HOD, and I didn't want to, but I did. And most of the women there said, oh, good, I can get rid of my husband for a night a month.
Yeah, but it's all brave talk until the push comes to shove.
Yes,
and I've seen them get involved.
But here we've got the women involved in the cake and bake, for example, for the firefighters. We've got the women helping out as volunteers for the golf day. We have women involved with the Zichron Menachem projects that we're running here. So there are various opportunities, and as we're finding them, so women are getting involved and more involved, and we're slowly doing it that way. Obviously, for the installations, we try and put on evenings for them while we're doing the installations. We had a very successful one at our last installation. We had an evening for the women, and they really liked it. So we'll follow up on that. We also have guest speakers coming to the lodge roughly once a quarter. So we've had some very, very interesting ones. We've had a freedom fighter from Second World War who gave us a talk. We have a survivor who gave us a talk. We gave an I think we gave her 45 minutes to talk, and after 3 hours we couldn't stop. No, we didn't want to stop her because we were so interested in what she had to say. You know, talking of a woman in her 90s, and she just, it was just fascinating. We learned about somebody who went down to the southern end of South America and camped out there. So we've had a number of really, really interesting talks, as well to try and, the idea being that you're trying to stimulate growth in your, one of our early fundraisers was a talk by a Muslim guy, on his book, The Jew Is Not My Enemy, which is a sold-out event. A lot of, not just members, Absolutely. But obviously family and friends and everybody else who came to listen to him speak. And he is actually still very vociferous in the press here, trying to make sure that people understand that there are different aspects of their religion, and we have to be careful. But it's fun.
So we had
some really, really good times.
We had a talk on the Sarajevo Haggadah. I don't know if you know about it, but that was a Haggadah that was written in the 1300s, and it found its way to Sarajevo, where it's kept in a vault, and it's very closely guarded. But the Muslim imam during the war managed to save that document, which was being sought by the Nazis, and he managed to hide it away, and it survived, and it's been refurbished. I don't know if that's the correct word. You can't get to see it because they keep a copy out for the public, but it's hidden away, but it was survived, and it was only due to the Muslim community in Sarajevo, which managed to save it.
Yeah.
So yes, some things are good.
Yeah, it's a mixed bag of people in the world, unfortunately.
So
we all need to work together and live together. So
we're coming to the end of a fascinating hour. We've unfortunately, when you're in the studio, time seems to fly. Our time is up. Cyril, I want to thank you for coming on. Cyril is in Toronto, Lodge Ilan Ramon. If you want to contact the Hebrew Order of David with anything to do with either South Africa, America, United Kingdom, Israel, and Canada, as we've been discussing, contact us on 011-640-3017 or admin@hrdavid.org. And thank you and best wishes to the members of the Lodge in Lan Ramon, and good night and good Shabbos to everyone.
Thank you very much for your opportunity. Thanks.
Thank you.